Call this meeting to order. Gracie, can we have the roll?
Chair Wood.
Here.
Vice Chair Turner.
Yes, here.
Commissioner Christensen.
Here.
Commissioner Shelton.
Here.
Commissioner Tobar.
Here.
Commissioner Miller.
Here.
Commissioner Velez. Okay, we have a quorum.
All right, first up, public communications. Don't see any general public communications, so we'll move forward to the consent items. First of all, approval of the minutes from our previous meeting. Any edits or corrections to the minutes? Do I have a motion to approve? Anybody in particular?
I'll do it.
Ah, very
fair. Motion to approve.
And I'll second it for Commissioner
Shelton. All right, we have a motion and a second. Can we get a vote, please?
Chair Wood.
Yes.
Vice Chair Turner.
Yes.
Commissioner Christensen.
Same.
Commissioner Shelton.
Yes.
Commissioner Tobar.
Dana wasn't here.
Commissioner Miller.
Yes.
Okay, passed. Just made it. Okay, now we move on to our formal items, and we've got two significant formal items.
Yeah.
Yes. I'll let Stephen start us off.
Yeah, just to tee this up. This should be sharing. Apologies. One second. Sharing. Green. Keep going up.
Yeah.
Excellent. So teeing up these assignments, just as the staff and just as a note to share with the commission based on, you know, recent lessons learned from a Arts and Culture Commission assignment that they had recently got from the City Council Rules Committee, was just reiterating it's essential to keep the finalized and the approved recommendation in the commission's finalized report is clear and concise. So what has been developed up here is purely an example that is based off of what was submitted in the draft reports by the ad hoc committees that you guys will be reviewing today. These recommendations are just very, again, very clear, very direct, very to the point, and it helps provide staff who will be receiving the finalized versions of these, both of these reports, the assignments reports, to help better develop and repackage these in a final staff report that will be presented to City Council for recommendation. In a recommendation example A, it would be the commission's recommendation to direct staff to develop a formal guidelines, in this case for a ceremonial line and program that takes into consideration the commission's recommendations. We package that, submit that to City Council for their consideration based on your recommendations. A B, a little bit more detailed, provides an extra process in there. If it is the commission's desire or what they agreed upon that you wish to see first, what you would recommend wanting to see what staff had produced based on the recommendations of guidance, developed today or approved in today, repackage it, bring it back to commission before then, bringing it back to City Council for final determination by City Council. So just two examples. It's basically, and I can reiterate this again when the next assignment comes up as well, but just wanted to table that before passing it on to Chair Wood. So, and obviously I'm here for this question. Thanks.
All right, so the first item is the ceremonial lighting at City Hall. So we'll review a draft ceremonial lighting program versus, say, ordinance? And as Vice Chair, could you maybe just give us a brief summary of the conclusion and the recommendations?
The recommendation was for the Parks and Recreation Committee to adopt a formal ceremony lighting policy program that governs the lighting for the city hall during special events and other things that it might be lit up for. And then we're going to present that to, we did in the ad hoc committee, write a report that you all have seen. And tonight we're just going to discuss any things that you might want to change or add or anything like that, so we can move forward with submitting it either to staff, Parks and Rec staff, and letting them run with it, or submitting it to Parks and Rec staff and having them bring it back to us for a final approval of it before it goes to City Council. Yeah.
All right, so I'll open it up for conversation, comment, any clarifications, any questions?
I have not necessarily a question, more of a comment, I suppose. This whole process has felt kind of funny. I mean, I wasn't here for the initial portion of it, but it does seem strange that City Council's asking the commission to create a policy that they then adopt. I mean, it feels as though ultimately their job, but
yeah, and
I appreciate having the input on it. No, I don't really. Besides that, that was all I had to say.
I was part of the ad hoc committee, and I was very grateful for Commissioner Velez to take the lead on writing and drafting this. I know I had the same question and concern you had, and one of the responses was because it falls on city land, mm-hmm. on city property, so I guess that makes it.
No, I mean, I understand that. Like, it feels like they're
like what?
The government body.
Yeah, I had the same, like, and I mean, I think we all shared the same sentiment, but at the end of the day, it kind of makes sense. You know, it's outdoorsy.
And I think that it's, correct me if I'm wrong, but that this is part of kind of the new governing process where the Rules Committee is kind of set up on the front end as kind of a quarterback, and they throw things out to the different commissions to provide recommendations that then go to council. So I think recommendation more than policy is what I would characterize this as.
Which I fully appreciate. Like, I actually like that they're asking that question.
Now, the question I had is, it's just that we get city approved holidays and events, and that do we know what the city, like, what are the city approved holidays? Do we know? Is that a
City Hall follows
sort of this.
Established calendar and what, you know, holidays are recognized. I believe City Council actually helps develop that too. So I mean, that still can be worked out through.
Do they adopt the calendar each year? It's their council calendar, but does that have the holiday? What's that, the holiday schedule as well?
It might be in consideration. I mean, I can get back to you with that one, but they definitely do vote on and develop what the meeting calendar is and what they're, I guess, recognizing if anything conflicts with their calendar. Yes.
So, yeah, I guess my question, there's not a Christmas holiday. There's just like, it's a holiday, you know, the generic.
City Hall goes through a winter closure period.
Winter closure. Okay, that's the euphemism we're using. Okay. Well, just that way, you know, and so we're avoiding the religious issue. That's why, that's really the purpose of my question. And then again, I noted it's no more than two consecutive days for any event. So in other words, for example, a Pride month or something like that, it wouldn't be for a whole month. Best case, it's 2 days for whatever your event or occasion would be.
Which I'm supportive of that, because if it's longer than that, what makes it special, right? Like, you know, if it's blue the entire month, the Dodgers are in the playoffs, just saying.
Another example.
I mean, great example I thought of there, but, you know, it's like, well, you know, it's not unique, right? So I know I'm supportive of the limitation on it. I actually thought that was a thoughtful, keeps it special and unique.
All right. Any other? Not everybody's great with the way it is.
I do have one question, and this is, and maybe I just missed it when going over it. I just was pulling it up again on my phone to make sure I remember to ask this correctly. But this policy doesn't, it's specifically for people who are asking to have, you know, lighting configurations and things like that. The city can follow its own, or will be following its own calendar if they choose to do, or if the city chooses to do things on its own. So, for example, the two-day restriction doesn't necessarily apply to city decisions. This is just for external applicants.
That's not the way I read it. Yeah, I mean, I read it's 2 days is 2 days. And then, because most of it, again, the way I read it, is it's most city generated for the most part. Right? City holidays, city events, city sponsored, this and that.
And then we added one of the limitations. The city reserves the right to adjust, cancel, or override scheduled lighting in the event of emergencies or significant city priorities.
Okay. And the reason why I was asking is because 2 days is, you know, on space seems fine. But if the city wants to have something set up for, like, St. Patrick's Day for a week, then technically that's not in accordance with the policy. So that was just something that I didn't realize that was meant to be applying to all city events, not just other, you know, outside applicants or parties or whomever wants to be changing this.
Well, on page 2, it does say the city may override any existing and confirmed ceremonial lighting event in support of citywide, national, or world emergency stuff. So, yeah, the city can.
Okay, right. That's all I was.
Yeah, they.
But again, see, I read that very differently than the city chooses to take a week for St. Patrick's Day versus, well, oh, we got to not light it because, you know, there's something going on.
Yeah. And that was my only, I would say, my only specific question, I suppose, in regards to how it's written. And I don't know how you all feel about it or if there's a difference of opinion here, but just something I thought I would bring up.
Yeah, we'll be taking into consideration to figure out what, I mean, how this also could apply to something that is of a light scenario for the city, application process for the city.
And 2 days was just sort of a stake in the ground kind of thing, I assume.
We reviewed, I think, a couple of other cities and templates, and that's going to be kind of the standard.
Hmm.
7 days was a little
too. Yeah, we looked at Houston, Tampa, Denver.
Are we aware of any time where the city lights it more than 2 days?
I think I shared at the last meeting was. Currently, there's an informal process by request, and the most recent request in this informal process was kind of the extent was 1 or 2 days.
An outside group?
Correct.
So the city, though, doesn't choose to light it in a specific way for
time? Based on, since I've helped with the informal approval process, no, I know that it was a little bit more activated, or it may have been a little bit more activated. Under previous city management. Since then, and that's the reason why the ability to do so is actually installed now. Like, it has the capability to do so. But it has since been inactive.
All right, so we're good. Did we add any clarification to that point, or we're good the way it is?
If I may make a recommendation.
That's why we're here.
I appreciate the idea of setting out a guideline of 2 days or 48 hours or whatever it is, but I do think that we could potentially recommend a slightly softer language, and it's that not just exclusively in the event of emergencies, it's if the city council chooses to direct staff to do, you know, something in a different manner or just in the time frame. Because the way I read it was more along the lines of this is only going to happen in case of an emergency would be ever changed this. And I don't know, this seems pretty serious for what is ultimately just life on a building. So so that would be my only recommendation, is that we just loosen that up a little bit.
And I think to add to that, it is interesting with the next bullet point down, which is the length of time for each group request is entirely at the discretion of city staff and city council. So you have these two provisions that, like, reconcile each other or completely conflict with each other, depending upon how you look at it. I think this really leaves a lot of discretion to council as it should. So I would be supportive if folks wanted to soften that language around the 2 days, but I also think there's mechanisms in here to allow that to happen as it's written. But I don't have a strong opinion on it, I guess is my point. Not to be wishy-washy over here, but.
I mean, if nobody else feels that this is an issue, then I'm fine with it.
I'll just say this is going to go to staff. And
right.
It's going to go to city council. So it's going to be changed and worked anyway.
Manipulated, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it reflects the desire, as I understand it, of the ad hoc committee to not, like, the 2 days was from your guys' research of other jurisdictions, and that seemed to be an appropriate number based on your discretion. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. And to be clear, that part I'm totally fine with. Just, I think I was kind of hitting on the same thing that
it
felt is. Like, you know, you can have it this way, or you can have it that way, you know. But that's kind of, like when you're trying to leave discretion up to city council anyway, that's kind of how it's gonna be.
That's how it's gonna be. Yeah, exactly.
And then just I'm trying to kind of foresee potential areas of conflict, but in terms of the priority, I see that it says preference will be given to events that are locally organized and that affect the largest number of City of Ventura residents. And it also says that you can request it up to a year in advance. So let's say that you got some group that they come in and they have a request and they get the dates, you know, booked for their lighting. And then some other group shows up that's more aligned with this preference clause. Can they override those guys, or is first come, first serve? Because it doesn't say that.
It's at the city's discretion, right?
Yeah, it is.
So, okay.
The staff?
Yeah.
Staff determination?
It would be guidelines. Would help determine that. And it could be proposed in any fashion. Currently, there is, I mean, if it falls in line with what's in place right now for just general permitting requests, requests can be taken up for about a year, and it is on a first-come, first-served. Basis as well, unless, like I said, unless the city wants to, unless there's a clause or some note in here that would just provide the city to make a judgment call to supersede, you know, a request but you'd have to be pretty justified to do so.
Right. Okay. All right. Any other comments?
I when I first heard this, I saw it was from the Rules Committee. I'm just sort of curious of who did it come from first? Who is the first? Was it somebody or some group that said this would be a great idea? They've seen it in other cities.
How did it get to Rules Committee?
I mean, this doesn't have anything to do with our recommendation here, but I was just kind of curious to where this, who this person, whatever it was, where originally came
from. Question.
You know, who are you doing a favor for, maybe? Not. Okay, so let's look at the recommendations, yeah.
Right, yeah. All right, so do we have a motion to make a specific recommendation with regard to this recommendation?
Stephen, you want to explain A and B, how they're a little bit different?
Yeah, kind of touch on it, reiterating.
Buddy?
Yeah,
sorry.
Go ahead, yeah.
Are you comfortable?
Well, sure. I don't want you to be redundant if everyone else already heard this.
The biggest thing I want to highlight out of here is, and you touched on it in your beginning remarks about your experience with the ad hoc, is reiterating, and there would need to be obviously a motion and a census in here, is reiterating that the intended assignment was it's a program, it's not a policy. This is something that that can and will likely be run by just the city staff. There's no policy needing to be done. This is purely just an application program opportunity. So the recommendation in here is, it does include the program verbiage in there. Therefore, it would need to be updated in what the final, the finalized commission report states.
So is the guidance here, if I'm hearing you correctly, is that if we are going and it means we're happy, go ahead and forward it to city council. They'll vote on a program and say yes, the program, and give it to you guys to implement. If we want to come back for further discussion, it's more like B.
Yeah. So all in all, keeping in mind as an advisory committee, you're providing your advice and a recommendation saying, hey, based on the assignment that's been tasked to you and the process that you had weeded through to get it to this point, our advice would be, and we recommend that staff takes in consideration when developing a final program that, you know, what was landing into the report. Keeping in mind that still these recommendations still need to land within our current policies, procedures, meeting codes, and whatnot. So when it comes to adjustments that will likely need to happen, and that can go with both assignments, keeping that in mind, plus and or the direction from City Council, who is the appointing, you know, the entity, the final determination, that's who makes that final decision. When we talk about the purpose behind the recommendations that are listed here is it would be in, if you were to choose something closer to or exactly, example A here, it's you as a commission are essentially recommending that City Council direct staff to formalize this program and take into consideration what you have in your report, and then we'll bring that back to council, and that's basically it. The next one is example B is you would be requesting or recommending City Council direct staff to develop something to bring back to you that's in a more formalized version for you to provide additional review and additional recommendations or further recommendations. They would have to agree upon that process for that to happen. And then we would bring this back to you, a formalized version, before you go, yeah, that looks good. And then we would bring it then back to council a second time for them to go, hey, thanks for sending it their way, and then incorporating again their recommendations, staff report, and I mean me outlining what those recommendations were, how they were incorporated or couldn't be incorporated for whatever reason, and City Council, you make the final decision. Does that make sense?
Ultimately, yeah. How much work do we want Stephen to do?
Right.
Well, I trust in what we were tasked to do, and so I not making a vote right now or making a motion would support letting it roll now and go let them have it, and just, we did our thing and you guys move forward with that. So that would just how at this point, without hearing from everybody else right now, I would lean.
I would support that as well, especially because it's just for staff to take consideration. They don't have to literally word for word repeat this. It's they need to modify it as needed to, like, maybe there's language in some law that says, you know, 2 days is too few, you must do it for three, and it's on record somewhere, and they can reference that and say, oh, thank you, commission, but we got to adjust it a little bit. And I think that's totally fine how it's set up, to just go back to staff, they put it together, send it to the council, and and the council can send it back if they don't like what they've seen. And like, that's totally in their purview as well.
So. And I think what I'm hearing here too is that the City Council is trying to be respectful of the fact that the commissions can't direct staff specifically.
Right.
You don't serve with our pleasure. So you can just tell us to go take a hike if you want to. So, yeah, I think I've gathered what you guys have done too. This is fine.
All right. So, do we have a motion relative to the lighting of City Hall for ceremonial occasions?
And then one thing for clarity too is not just establishing that, but if you choose to make sure that we update the word policy in here into a program, make sure you capture that in your consideration or your motion as well, if you choose to do so.
So can you? I'm sorry to even belabor this any further. What is the hesitation by using policy versus program here? And then maybe I missed this with the Rules Committee items. I understand policy speaks to that's a rule for city, the city staff has to follow it.
Yeah.
Is the final version of this not planned to be implemented within the city's administrative manual?
The policy is rigid, and correct me if I'm wrong, rigid in just law and whatnot. The a program is just an opportunity, which I think that my perception as staff was when this was, you know, this was assigned from the rules committee, was to just take into consideration if there could be a package or an opportunity for the community to do this. As far as policy considerations, that takes a full revision and consideration from council, from legal, from whatnot. I don't think that was actually the intended purpose when this was assigned.
That's what I was kind of curious about, because, well, ultimately practice becomes policy even if it's not written. And so by adopting this or recommending this adoption, is this effectively becoming a policy anyway? Is one of my questions. That's more of a question for the city attorney's office and city council.
Correct. So.
My thought is that program is the more appropriate term here, because for me, I don't know, good governance, if you're using the term policy, we're talking something that's potentially going into municipal code.
Yeah.
And that does not rise to this level. Yeah, there's all sorts of informal policies that really should be called programs in local government. Like, there's a bazillion examples of that.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, if it's in muni code, that's policy. Everything else is just implementing program. That or general plan. If you're in muni code or general plan, that's your policy. Everything else is programmatic. So I support the adjustment to...
Yeah,
call us program.
Would you like to so move?
Yes. Or did we? Sorry, we said A. Okay. So I will make the motion to direct staff to develop formal guidelines for a ceremonial lighting program at City Hall that takes into consideration the commission's recommendation and changes the term policy to program throughout the report and associated materials.
All right, we have a motion and a second.
Chair Wood?
Yes.
Vice Chair Turner?
Yes.
Commissioner Christensen?
Yes.
Commissioner Shelton?
Yes.
We'll send it back.
Commissioner Tovar?
Yes.
Commissioner Miller?
Yes.
All right, one down. Okay, next up.
It'd have been a scene.
Is the tree protection ordinance. So much different proposal level.
Yes, thank you. Not my first word.
All right, we do have a speaker on this item. Marianne Bevener.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi.
I did submit my 1,000 character comments in advance, so you'll see that. I also included a picture of a tree that's been cut down and is growing again. So I just wanted to let you know, I live in Midtown on a red, I have to say, red flowering gum tree-lined street.
Mm-hmm.
Very messy, but very beautiful. It's meant the birds love it. So I really appreciate that the draft that you put together included for both public and private properties. But I would like you first to include that the replacement trees must have low water requirements. There are 22 on the Ventura recommended tree list. I also recommend that you consider recommending, please consider recommending the use of California native trees. I planted 5 in my yard since I moved here 8 years ago. The third is on page 5 in the document. You talk about a consideration of using 3D mapping software and the cost of that and the cost of this program with the city. And I don't think it's needed, because you can measure the crown spread by walking under a tree, and you can walk around the trunk of the tree to get a good idea of the circumference. Or like me, if you're a tree hugger, you can just hug the tree to understand the circumference. And the fourth thing is the design review committee and the planning department has been holding general public public meetings on objective design standards. And since all new developments have a landscaping component, please consider sending the draft ordinance over to them, to the planning department or the design review committee, whichever to go to. So just take a quick review before the city council. And I'll add that I'm not a fan of palm trees. They are just telephone poles, and you can't compost their droppings, their leaves, their fronds. And finally, I'd say I appreciate the Park and Rec Department, and I'm sitting here realizing that I did a haunted tour of City Hall, and this was one of the rooms that we talked about. So I hope we can get this over meeting with over. Thank you.
All right. So that was a good kind of framing of this topic. So I'll kind of throw it out there. So we did kind of meet and decide that we felt that a tree protection ordinance was important, and protecting heritage trees was important in terms of the city. We did create definitions, and we were, I think, specifically broad in terms of inclusion of trees. So not just, you know, kind of like some of the other ordinances in the county that only really include oak trees and sycamores. We definitely wanted to include a broad range of trees, including eucalyptus and other trees that do, you know, also help butterflies and have other good purposes and have been in the county for a long time, even if they may not be native. We basically, the other key criteria was that we wanted to make it an ordinance that would be followed, that people would obey. So we wanted to make the cost as low as possible to apply, and then that way people would apply. But the main idea was replace one for one, kind for kind. So if you take out a large tree, then you need to replace that with a tree of similar circumference, or multiple trees that equate to the same circumference and or canopy. So basically you're replacing the tree with an equivalent collection of trees. And if you don't want to put those on your property, then you can request and pay for the city to do that at a different location. And that was, I think, the essence of what we were trying to capture.
I want to thank everyone who was on the ad hoc committee, because the fact we got through this in like two meetings was kind of nothing short of miraculous. And I want to thank Heather Melton for all your guidance and help with us, because this was a lot to take on. The only thing I would add to Commissioner Wood's overview before we get into it was we wanted also, in terms of application, because this is applying very broadly to the city, at least as we envisioned it, having a two-tier application system. So tier one being your single family property owners, just your regular, you know, mom and pop property owners, nonprofit organizations, folks like that, and then all other property owners were in another tier. And this is in the consideration section of the staff report. The challenge with this ordinance, when you start digging into it, is it's going to take a substantial amount of staff time to implement. And we acknowledge that if we made tier one applicants, your single family property owners, pay the actual cost of going through and doing this, at the actual true cost of the city, it's going to be expensive and would deter people from even applying to begin with. So that was kind of the rationale behind the tier one, tier two mindset. This was written, as you see, in a few different, based on our meetings, that kind of took what we did in the format of this staff report. You can see there's a few places where we give the option for, okay, there's two ways you can define a protected tree. There's a lot of stuff here that needs to be flushed out by staff, because, you know, we're not professionals. This was just us putting together, hey, this is what we think the framework this should look like. So just want to preference it with that. This is very much a starting point from us, the ad hoc committee, back to you all as the entire commission, and then actually onwards to staff and council. So that's my overview.
And then just the one other clarification that I would provide, and again, Tan, correct me if I'm different than the way you remember it, but is if you look back to 4BI2, we talk about the replacement trees, and it can be any species except those prohibited by the city, be an established ordinance or uniformly applied policy, including monocots, or trees used primarily for food or fiber. I don't think we want to exclude people being able to plant an orange tree. I think our intention was that we would exclude orchards, you know, commercial orchards and trees associated with those orchards in this whole ordinance. Because those are commercial. That's what they do. The trees die, they replace them. They do whatever they're doing. That's separate from this.
Yeah, and the other thing I would add, the reason for the replacement trees being broad is we were keeping in mind, I think it was our intention from a policy standpoint too, because this applies uniformly to everyone across the city, I don't know about my fellow, ad hoc committee members, they don't want to be in the position of dictating, hey, on your private property, you can only plant from this list of 21 trees.
Right.
Like, you can be able to plant whatever tree you want on your private property. That's your private property. You can plant a tree. As long as you plant the tree, plant whatever. On the food and fiber, that's I think, a great point of consideration. And I may have written it, you're jogging my memory, that I may have written it slightly differently in the staff report than what we discussed. Because you look at the exemptions section of the report, which is where exemption section 3, trees used primarily to produce food and fiber for commercial or personal consumption. So I added the words personal consumption in there. If the intention was for commercial, that personal language can be removed. However, the more I thought about it, and perhaps the reason I wrote it in here and something we can discuss, I didn't want to penalize someone whose backyard avocado tree was 60 years old and has reached the end of its productive fruiting life, who wanted to cut down their avocado tree to plant a new avocado tree. That to me just seemed like, because fruit trees have a natural lifespan where they're going to be most productive in terms of fruit. I think those of you who have fruit trees in your backyard have probably experienced this. The orange tree gets 40 or 50 years old, and you don't eat the oranges as you did when it was a 10-year-old tree. So not penalizing people for, like, removing an orange tree because the orange tree doesn't make oranges anymore. Sorry, I went way off the rails there. But, yeah, hopefully that answers your
Yeah, no, that's a good clarification. Yeah,
I'm really curious what the rest of the group thinks. The recommendation, my one last thought here before I turn it over to consideration. The recommendation I put in the staff report, which can be changed, is more in alignment with the up there to send it to council, to send it to staff, to send it back to us, just because this thing was so darn dense and complicated, I think, in the pause. So that doesn't necessarily have to be the recommendation this commission moves forward with, but when I drafted it, that was kind of my thought, where I thought we'd want to go, but that can be changed if it's the desire of the commission.
All right. Thomas, I know you
and yes,
wanting to comment. As you can see, we did have our designated wonk included in the subcommittee, but please.
I was curious why the Ventura County tree ordinance wasn't referenced.
That's a question for me. I'm happy to answer. The thought process we had early on is the Ventura County tree ordinance is a good starting point, but it has the limitations on the species type. And our thought was, in Ventura City proper, we're not a East County or Ojai Valley city that has a plethora of native trees. Most of Ventura's mature tree canopy within the city is actually non-native trees that have been planted over time. And I think our first pass in ad hoc committee, I guess it's just Chair Wood that's here, that's on the ad hoc committee, the thought was we wanted to paint with a broader brush initially for our first pass at it, say, hey, we feel anything generally 30 feet tall, 30 feet wide, and a trunk diameter of, what was it, 18 inches, we thought was a tree worth protecting regardless.
And that was kind of some of my initial comments. And we did look at the county's ordinance, and we did look at Thousand Oaks and Camarillo, I believe, right? So we did consider, yes. So we did consider those, but we specifically made the decision to broaden the protected trees.
Okay. As far as the Ventura County one, though, what protection it has for oaks and sycamores and other natives has greater protection. Like, what's proposed here is just if it's 30 feet tall and 30 foot crown. For an oak tree to get that big, it takes a long time. Ventura County protects oaks with a circumference of 9.5 inches. That's That's small.
That's small.
That's like a 3-year-old tree.
Right.
5 to 10. Well, I mean, personal experience growing them.
Yeah.
It takes a bit.
Yeah.
But still, 5 to 10-year-old oak tree should be protected, I think. And I don't think with a draft version right now provides that protection. Because it's
true. And I think we did start looking at the having different categories, you know, and we kind of shied away from that just because of the complexity and having the younger, smaller trees, just because they were a certain type of tree. You'd have to, you know, it require a lot more research on the part of an individual who's doing something in their own yard.
And I definitely share your sentiment and your desire, especially with the oak trees. But the other thing I think we talked about was just looking at Ventura, and this was not done formally. This was very informally. We started thinking about, okay, how many instances of smaller oaks and sycamores do we have within the city limits? Again, within the city limits, it felt not as extensive. And I think that's the reason why we, as an ad hoc committee, decided, okay, let's just keep this simple in terms of one policy. I mean, if it's something we want to consider to have these different carve-outs for native trees, that's a discussion we can have. But on the first pass, the thought was, as we started to, I think, become overwhelmed by the assignment we were given in the short amount of time, it was, okay, let's just figure out what we view as a across-the-board benchmark mature protected tree. And that's where the 30-30 inlets came from, was just kind of what we thought measuring state was in terms of a tree that warrants a protection.
My initial thoughts here, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no, please.
Is that this is nowhere close to being ready.
No.
I have some personal issues with the idea that the way that this is kind of panning out is that anything. Well, I do appreciate the effort to expand the designation of a protected tree as something that is actually quite broad. I'm okay with that, because I do tend to feel as though your average resident in the city is not going to understand that they can't remove a 9.5-inch circumference oak tree if that were to be the rule,
right,
in their backyard. Because at your point, to be a 5 to 10-year-old oak tree, that tree could be relatively small still. And as, you know, as a homeowner myself, I'm not going to be looking to the city to see if I can take a tree out of my backyard.
Right.
That's not something that I think is something that as a resident it's really even going to think about, which kind of to me begs the question of, well, what is the point? And I also think that, you know, I do feel like from a staff perspective, this is an incredibly difficult policy or ordinance to enforce. Mm-hmm. Unless it is brought to the attention of the city.
Mm-hmm.
So I have some issues with it, where right now it feels as though that if this is the direction we want to go, then being more specific may be more helpful. Mm-hmm. Like the way that the county has written this is that, yes, you know, the city of Ventura is not a monoculture, sure, absolutely. But at the same time, there are a lot of decisions that were made prior to a resident removing a tree. They may, I mean, you're talking about second, third owners of homes, et cetera, developers have put these tracks together with the landscape plan. They've gone through planning. They've provided a planting plan with a species list and all that. Nobody who lives here now, mostly anyway, had any say in that process. Right. And so if they have a tree that, for example, may be considered protected, but I know you have an option in here in terms of, like, if it's an imminent safety to health or even an issue for health and safety, mm-hmm. you know, maybe you have a developer planted tree that was improper for its site.
Yeah.
You know, that to me, I think there's some conflicts there that could probably be explored a little more as well. So, and I hate to say it, I'm coming from a staff perspective from another city.
Yeah.
I deal with this stuff all of the time.
Yep.
And it is a challenge even from public owned trees, because
yeah.
again, are we applying this to city owned property? And again, it seems like we would be, absolutely, which I think is correct, but I'm not sure the right direction to go here. I think this is a great start. I just don't know. I don't know how I feel about it currently in terms of, like, whether or not I'm even happy with the idea. So
I don't think you can defend any of us on the ad hoc committee by saying this is not. I think we all acknowledge that this was just the first baby steps, and this really needs to be evaluated by professionals.
Yeah, and I think there's a planning element here too as well.
Absolutely.
And I don't know how many new developments are coming into the city. I'm obviously there are new redevelopments. There's a lot of redevelopment.
Yeah.
And there's going to be landscape components to those.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but are they really looking 10, 15, 30 years down the line?
Which that reminds me back on the, not to circle back, but on the oaks and the sycamores, the reason we actually decided to not have oaks and sycamores, now I'm recalling our conversation, was we felt if there was additional protections for them in this very broadly written ordinance, that you would actually end up discouraging homeowners and developers from planting the trees, because they would go, I'm never going to be able to remove it ever or do anything to it. So we just were more broad, but yeah.
It's similar to like how the Mills Act is applied to historic homes in a way. It's like, well, and it's a beautiful house, sure, but I don't want to deal with the historical preservation committee every time I change a light bulb.
Right.
Yeah, I think we want to keep, you know, the concept that, yeah, it's important to maintain an urban forest, and, you know, what can we do to frame that in the simplest, you know, kind of form and most comprehensive way possible.
And I do agree with the comment that was made earlier about if we are going to go down this road and asking a resident to estimate, using digital tools is great, but I, by no means do I think that should be required.
No. And that's something that really needs to be explored, is if we're asking everyone to follow this ordinance, that's a big burden on people, 100%, especially on private property owners. That you know, begs the question here of, you know, our initial recommendation was, yeah, make it as easy as you can. Digital tools are one way potentially to do that. But it's a valid commission talking point of, you know, is this something you want to apply to everyone equally across the board? Or is it City of Simi Valley, for example, we looked at their ordinance. They have very similar requirements. They don't care what species it is. It's just a certain height, diameter, et cetera. But they exempted out anyone who owns a single family home in the city. But then when we look at the city of Ventura's map, it's like 80% of the city is single-family homes. So you're protecting the public right-of-ways, the parks, multifamily, and commercial properties. But that's like, and these are not accurate numbers. These are estimates, like 30% of the city's total land area, right? So it's that balance. And I didn't know what the right answer is. I think that's something we've got to discuss to figure out. I don't know. Or maybe SAPs. I don't know.
I'm glad you actually mentioned that, because yeah, to me, this really feels like this should be a staff driven discussion. I'm sorry. I apologize. because it feels like there's a lot more research that could be done here on a more professional level than just us talking about it.
And I think that's why I really strongly recommend that this go to council, for council to tell staff to draft something, for staff to bring it back to us, and then back to council, because it's like, us in a room over 3 hours putting things together.
Banging it out.
Yeah, it was not, you know, I'm sure you've written ordinances, I've written ordinances, they take more than 3 hours in a room sitting down to put together a really thoughtful one. I think potentially this is a good start if it's the direction we want to go, but yeah, there's a lot more work to be done.
Well, I would again refer back to the county's tree ordinance, because that has gone through that process. Their planning department spent a lot of time on this, and I don't think we could be reinventing the wheel for our city. I understand that there may be limited oaks within the city, therefore this ordinance would be limitedly applicable to them. It wouldn't affect a lot of people, because a lot of people don't have oaks or sycamores. But where they do occur, they probably should be protected to the most extent possible. This ordinance from the county would provide a mechanism for the city to somewhat adopt. I would also point out that the county and city both occur in and outside of the coastal zone. So anything that is a policy that impacts the coastal zone will need coastal commission approval. And so I would again refer back to the county's ordinance, because that has received that approval. They didn't just make this up and run it through it. There was an iterative process. And so I know that at that level, there's going to be extra scrutiny. And so I think it would be in our city's interest to be as upfront with that process as possible and kind of front load that sort of stuff. I also agree that the best venue for this is in city planning. City planning staff should be the ones drafting this. This, it's fine for the Parks Commission to have some input on it. But this is a planning issue that the city planning should be intimately involved in.
Yeah. I can make
Commissioner Miller
add a current. So one of the things you mentioned that I think is actually kind of hits us on the nose is that the county has done a lot of this work already. This, we would not be the first city to say our ordinance is to adopt the county's guidelines as our guidelines and then both, you know, save you guys a lot of work if we were happy with it. Now, I know that there are issues with that because then you're basically, you know, you're subletting your policymaking ability to another governing body, which has its own issues. So that's all I'm going to say on that. But I do appreciate very much what you're saying. The second thing I wanted to say, though, is I also support the idea that this should be really going through planning staff with our input. But something, and this is, I'm going to say this from personal experience, if Parks and Rec staff and the maintenance component staff, like or enforcement staff, are not involved in that review process, then it is not going to be something that I, if I were on city council, would be happy with, because it's essentially made in a silo.
Right.
Yeah, and that is where I think I have a big issue with say, okay, well, planning staff, here you go, because 9 times out of 10, planning will come up with something that then the other side of the city has to deal with, and they're like, well, what were you thinking? That doesn't work here in real life. So anyway, I know we're not making that decision right now, but it's just something that if that we do go down that road, that would be something that I would personally recommend is that it has to involve our staff.
If I can speak to the county ordinance, and this just might be a respectful policy disagreement, as I, you know, someone who does land use in the county, I feel the county's tree protection ordinance, while there are some good things to it, it is very burdensome. I think it limits people from planting native trees. I think it has a thing called a discretionary tree removal permit, which is overkill to ask anyone to get discretionary removal from an administrative body to remove a tree. My point of view is simple, and I think the intention, and this is something we can have debate about certainly, is I would rather see an ordinance that just said, hey, if you're removing a tree, all we ask is that you plant a tree at a replacement ratio to remove the tree you plant. It's for me, where I see it going, this is just my personal opinion, I'm not speaking for the ad hoc committee, is hey, we just want to encourage people that if you take a tree out, you put a tree back. What we want to avoid is a situation where the city or a property owner goes, hey, you know what? And we've seen it all over the place, and sometimes for very valid reason, a tree gets removed and then the tree well sits empty for 10 years. You know, right? The idea is we remove a tree, we put a tree back. I admire a lot of what the county is going for here, but just personally with where my heart was on the policy is I think the county's one is overkill in my opinion, but that's just my opinion, not the ad hoc committee. So that's where I go. Yeah. I give you my
thought. I like how, well, I don't know how it's played out here. The two-path process where you've got native trees that qualify under a specific category, and then you've got heritage trees that qualify under a different category, because I think it's worth considering their value with different characteristics. Heritage old trees that are of a large circumference, large crown, it's worth protecting, even though they're non-native. They're here, they're doing a good job.
Yeah, you've looked at them all over the
place. Yeah, whatever it helps. They're here, they're doing their job. And then also at the same time, recognizing that, well, if that eucalyptus was replaced with a native tree, that would support more local native habitat, like native wildlife. Like that would serve a better ecological.
Well, that's debatable, but yeah. I don't agree with that much.
You don't?
No, not at all. No, I think eucalyptus trees have a high value, and I think they're maligned in error, and I, you know, especially as you know, butterfly habitat and the kind of things that they do there, I think are bring a lot of value. And they've been in the county longer than I have. And so that's a long time, whether they started here or not.
Right.
I think to limit it to oak trees, you know, to me, it's not, doesn't have a lot of value.
Right. Well, I would never suggest such. I like the applicability to heritage trees that qualify under a, a metric.
Right.
And I'm not saying that any and every eucalyptus needs to go, but if there were replacements with native, I don't see why that would be a problem for the native wildlife that are utilizing those as replacement habitat, because there are plenty of opportunities to do that, but that's separate.
Yeah.
Another comment I had in here is in regards to the in lieu fee. Mm-hmm. Any in lieu fee has to account for establishment time. You can't just pay $10 to go buy a tree and then it's just going to miraculously get in the ground.
Right.
It'll be watered on its own. It'll be weeded around on its own. It's like, you got to water it for 5 years.
Yeah.
And that means somebody has to water it for 5 years. And so in lieu fees, water and labor are the two main components of in lieu fees. Those have to be accounted for if somebody is choosing to pay their way out of the ordinance.
Yep.
Otherwise, just I don't think you can replace a 30-inch tree with 3 10-inchers. That's going to be problematic to put 10-inch diameter trees, to source them, to put them in the ground. So most people are going to put in 1 gallon, 5 gallons that are spindy little guys, totally fine. But then that means that the replacement ratio has to be accounted for in that. And so there's the fee issue and then the replacement ratio issue that I think needs to be adjusted. And I think that's where, again, the county can be leaned on for those sorts of items. But as long as that in lieu fee captures establishment is everything if you're trying to get a tree to live beyond the picture taking phase of putting it in the ground.
Yeah. And if I can speak to that just briefly, I think our intention at the ad hoc committee on both the replacement and the in lieu fee and why we didn't get into specifics on this is we are definitely looking to staff to help come up, define those. I personally, when I was writing this, I don't want to speak on behalf of Chair Wood, but we didn't want to say, oh, the lieu fee will be X amount of dollars and the replacement will be X amount of trees per every inch. I think that's something that is best left in the hands of the professionals in this case, which would be city staff. But I agree with the spirit of your comment that, the in lieu fees need to capture water and labor to establish any replacement trees that are planted. It's not going to be like we ask someone to, pay us $40 to go down to Home Depot to buy a tree. No, the fees got to cover the actual time and material going into planting that new tree. Like, I hear you 100% there.
Well, you're also touching on something that might run afoul of fee creation and balance and whether or not it actually covers costs.
Yep.
Like it's a Prop 218 issue. Yep. Like that may or may not have a place in this policy if it's something that is adopted through the city's fee schedule. If it's legal, then that's going to require some thoughts, because fees are incredibly
complex. You got to have a nexus.
Touchy.
Yep.
Yep.
Exactly. I hear you.
I mean, the nexus is clear here to me,
in lieu fees are not, again, they're not new. There are many municipalities in our immediate vicinity that have in lieu fees. I'm familiar with the LA County's in lieu fee program. I was part of the technical review committee to update it for their coastal zone. And that's where I know that water and labor are your two largest components that go into the establishment portion. And that's where I was disappointed with the counties in lieu fee did not include that. So that's where it was like, next opportunity I have to provide input into a process similar, I want to make sure that that is brought up and either not included for a reason or possibly included, because as someone who is in that industry, it's
it's helpful to have those maintenance dollars dedicated up front, so you're not scrambling at the back end. The other fee part is if a entity runs afoul of this program and violates it, I think that's an opportunity to collect revenue. That's the carrot stick end of things, where on the carrot end, the initial application fee low, you make compliance really easy, very straightforward. And then if you violate that, here come the sticks. And that's where I think there's opportunity to improve an ordinance on the violation side of it as well. And again, I would lean on the county. They've done that already.
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess we didn't put any language to that effect in there yet.
We had language under 5 for enforcement implementation. It was vague, though, and intentionally, because, again, we're not professionals.
But you're not writing the ordinance right here. This is just...
These are just policy.
This is civil action, right.
This is policy recommendations to staff to be, hey, go actually write an ordinance based roughly on these ideas, but they're the professionals at the end of the day.
And that's why I think the more ideas we can give staff,
so
let them know what might be helpful as they write that ordinance, I think would be better.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like we're all over the place. I don't know what the best idea is or the best way to tackle this in terms of going through this and saying, okay, what do we have consensus on? What don't we? It's probably what we need to do, though.
That's right. Well, I was waiting. We kind of haven't heard from a couple of members yet.
Seriously, just impressed by the dialogue and the knowledge at this table that I don't have anything that even compares what you guys are talking about. So I'm just clean and respectful of your guys' information, your guys' support, your supplying. It's awesome.
What's your thought from a resident perspective, if I might ask?
Similar to all of the comments you guys are making. And again, we go back to what Sheldon's saying about this is just a proposal to get going, to get the process moving, to have others that do this for their jobs to make the final policies.
I have a question. Is there another ordinance similar to this, remotely similar, that I'm going to use the word, that infringes on private property? Because from my understanding, if I have an avocado tree, or if I have any of these trees, and behind my house we do have eucalyptus trees, and they're never taken care of, and they are really bad for my allergies. And so I'm thinking, well, this is my thought process. We want to protect the trees, but then nobody's taking care of those trees. Those trees are in really bad shape that are adjacent to my backyard. I mean, really, really bad. And so in my thought process, I'm trying to figure out, why are we trying to protect trees if we can't even take good care of the ones that we have? But they're on the outside, they're in the barranca. But if that tree was in my property, I would want it out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, okay. So then I would be like, well, why can I not do that? Why do I have to pay? I respect individuals that have a passion for the ecosystem. I appreciate that. But in my property, why do I have to pay to take off a tree? And I mean, I have to ask permission if I want to put a shed. I get that.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
That's a fair question.
It's very fair.
Yeah,
that's a very fair question.
Well, and especially I know personal example is the neighbors next door are putting an ADU in, as many people are, and they hacked down two heritage orange trees, giant orange trees, just butchered them, and they're gone. And so, but a lot of people are putting in ADUs, and I'm sure there's a lot of trees that are going to be sacrificed, associated with that. And is that the state and the city wants everything, and anybody wants to put an ADU, that it's
right
carpet.
Yeah.
So, how do you balance that?
And so to add to insult to injury, because I was quiet and just thinking about everything that everybody was saying. So then I'm thinking of the elderly population. I'm thinking of my mother-in-law, who also owns her corner house and has a ton of fruit trees. She has an avocado, a lemon, an orange, a peach, a plum, and they are like 30 years old. And some of them need to go. But she lives on a fixed income.
Right.
And so could we recommend or propose, is there another way to get some income or some, you know, I don't know, maybe put resources for it in the recommendation where people can go and get, you know, assistance for that? I mean,
that's a great point.
I just think that there are those individuals like, okay, I can afford it. I'll pay you $200 and get rid of the tree. Or plant another one and meet the expectation of the city. That's not a problem. But there's a lot of elderly individuals, especially in her vicinity, that have a plethora of fruit trees and they're dying. But they can't afford to hire a gardener to come and take it out for $200 or pay $750.
Yeah.
I mean, I just.
So if I can't.
I'm probably going down the weeds.
No.
Apologize.
No, that's why we're here.
Very nice. In the draft we've put together, I do want to point out that in what section are we? Section 4, EI, replace the removed trees on site. I do want to point out this language, and this was very much where my intent was. If trees are replaced on site, I don't know what that ratio is, but if trees are replaced on site, there shall be no fees assessed beyond the application fees for a tree removal permit, which we directed staff to keep as the lowest amount feasible. Permit fees shall be kept to the lowest amount feasible to encourage compliance and successful implementation. Because, yeah, Commissioner Tofar, I hear you 100%, and I'm perhaps a little bit biased on the consulting side of the land use planning industry, but the last thing we need is another burdensome thing that property owners have to comply with. And in my policy intent, all I'm asking, where I lie personally, is if you take down a tree, just plant one to replace it. That's all I ask. For me personally, that's just where my head is on.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think also in that regard, the ordinance would exempt fruiting trees.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's written that way.
Yeah, that's how I have it written.
I think that's worthwhile because fruiting trees are expected to have a shorter lifespan. I had my house, personal experience. I had a 50-plus-year-old peach tree.
It doesn't produce anymore.
Which it produced, but nothing you wanted to eat. It produced flies.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Nice. And also, I mean, it's structurally at that age, it's impactful to my house, my neighbor's house. It you know, it came down before the winds. Like, we took it down before the windstorms came in. I planted a native in its wake. That little guy's doing great. I think in the regards to if there's single family residential owners who have legacy fruit trees, if they don't reach this 18 inch diameter, which for a fruit tree would be old as
fairly old. Most of them don't even get that.
Most don't get it.
Stop.
Yeah. Even like the avocado trees don't get that big. But if they did, they would still be exempt.
My neighborhood do.
Yeah. And so I think we can accommodate the individuals in those circumstances, just kind of as the proposal is here. I don't see a big burden on for that situation. But totally understand the concern.
Well, I think maybe an informal like kind of poll here amongst us all, and I want to open this up to conversation, just going back to the basics here. This ordinance could probably be simplified if we exempted single family homes from it.
And I guess
this applies to street trees and everything not zoned single family. Is that something folks here want to entertain? Like, we put single family in here on first pass. It doesn't have to be that way. Where does everyone fall on that?
Are we attacking a problem that doesn't really exist? You know, that doesn't need putting in a law that's not necessary.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Because it's a lot to ask people. I get it. Is it something, and I guess we can just go around if you're okay with that, Chair, but just informally, what does everyone think about that, the single family? Do we want to include it? Do we not?
You know, the question, I mean, before we do that, I want to maybe throw it back to staff and I guess Heather specifically. with regard to the comment about sort of city trees in need of maintenance, I guess, for lack of a better term. You know, if especially if we're going to restrict this ordinance to only, you know, city trees, basically, how is that done? In other words, I assume there's an existing process where, for example, in the trees behind her lot, that she'd be able to go to somebody and say, hey, this tree needs, you know, cleaned up or something, trimmed, or
right. So
it goes into the same process with other city trees.
It depends on the brink. Most of those, that's county.
Okay, sorry.
Okay, but yes, when there is a tree issue, residents are able to put in a comcate requesting a tree trimming. We do have a contractor right now through West Coast Arborist, and our city is gridded, and with the budget that's allocated each year, that's how our rotation works. But there is other tree work that is done by the in-house crew, as well as when people put in a request, we do have a city arborist who is on staff who goes out, he inspects them, he gives a report, and then they're scheduled and addressed based on his observation. So, yes.
And to your knowledge, does the county operate similarly?
I honestly don't know. I've never really put anything in there. They do have a process, but I'm not that familiar with Ventura County's.
All right. Well, I think it's a great recommendation that we kind of go around. Let's pull the group in terms of public versus private with regard to the ordinance.
In that regard, I don't think it would be appropriate to exempt single-family residents, because then that's an equity issue where that tree burden then falls on everybody else to preserve their trees rather than the predominant zoned areas of single family residents in this town. The burden should be borne by everybody, in my estimation.
I think it should exempt single family homes.
I hate to say this, it's going to be different for me. I actually doubt the necessity of the ordinance entirely. I find it next to impossible to enforce. So to me, the enforcement ordinance is part and parcel to its existence. And then on top of that, one step further, I would actually say that you might be able to accomplish the same thing. So when you purchase a home in the city, you go through the entire process of signing off everything. Mm-hmm. The city can choose to potentially require there to be documentation within the purchase packet that here's a list of recommended tree species that can be planted on this property. It could be something that we might be able to address through the planning and through the planning process as well, both on development side and the actual transaction side, of saying, you know, there is no restriction or to remove trees, but if you do choose to remove trees, these are recommendations for what you can replace them with, or what you should replace them with. Mm-hmm. Putting the onus on the resident to me seems to be more of an operative, more something that would be actually an educational opportunity than it is something that's more coercive, which is what this feels like to me. So sorry, that was
no, it's fine.
Yeah. So I guess at the end of the day, if I was forced to choose, I would exempt single family residences, but I truthfully don't believe that there's a need for it.
At all.
Right. I agree.
That's three, no on the private, which is
well, and it's like the square lateral required. Now you've got to have the trees.
I could go either way. For me, I hear what Commissioner Miller is saying and everyone with the burden of the private property owners, but I could very much be in favor for exempting them, but I think the ordinance needs to exist if for nothing else our city street trees, which are removed far too frequently and never replaced. And this did come out of a council recommendation out of the Rules Committee where they were talking about we should protect mature trees. What does city council have jurisdiction over? Their land, their right-of-ways. So if they want to protect mature trees, I am very much in favor of passing this requirement on to the city that, hey, you've actually got to replace street trees when you cut them down. And I know there's probably reasons we can't do that budgetarily, but, you know, guess what would make council allocate the money to do it if they passed something that said they had to do it? That's my thought with it.
I feel like that's kind of wishful thinking. Even
I know. But I guess not to be, I'm not being helpful at all. I could support this not applying to private property if that's the majority's consensus here. I'm not married to it.
Can I ask a quick question? Are there other cities that do not have, in our area, that do not have tree ordinances? Like Santa Barbara or Ojai. Well, I know Ojai does, but
yeah.
Is there any that just don't have an ordinance?
Yeah, there was, because there is a list. I can look it up and provide you a list.
Off of recollection, Vice Chair Turner, I do not believe Santa Paula has an ordinance. I do not believe Oxnard has an ordinance. And Ventura obviously does not have one. I believe the majority of the East County cities do. I know Santa Barbara. I'm pretty sure Santa Barbara has an ordinance.
Yeah. Oxnard has an ordinance, but it's for park rangers.
It's for public right.
Yeah.
Right. And Santa Barbara applies to private property. It's just for the city property.
Thousand Oaks.
Simi
Valley.
Thousand Oaks is for their oak trees.
Right.
So some of them do fall on private property. Private property. And they're all numbered and they have a very good record on theirs.
Yeah, they've got a whole different deal, right, over there. Yeah, interesting, because I've been swayed by the conversation here a bit. I could go as far as Commissioner Miller to say, you know, maybe this is something we don't need to put forward, but relative to the way it was presented to us, and I think to your point, Commissioner Shelton, I think to send it back to the council and say, city only, you guys ask for it, you know, you guys decide whether we want to have it or not. And if we're going to do it, we need to keep it generic the way we've kind of defined it in terms of heritage trees, size and scope.
And apply it to city property. Yeah, because my takeaway from watching, not to put words in the council member's mouth, but watching the deliberations between council member Moran and McReynolds in particular, who were the ones discussing it, was there was a desire on their part to see something that protected mature trees. I think it would be very appropriate if it's the desire of the commission to say, yeah, we're on board with that on city controlled land, in the public right of ways, in the public parks.
I'm curious if there's a way to say, okay, this is what, you know, we would like to see the exemption of private property. And if council feels that they want both private and public property protected, then is that something that
they can always do whatever they want.
Put on a measure or
a guideline, I think, because it basically punting it.
Yeah.
To the commission, which I apologize. That's
yeah,
what it
yeah.
feels like.
All right.
It sort of feels like asking somebody else to do your homework for you.
Well, I mean, we do have oversight of this.
But that's
what I mean, this department does.
Why can't they just go ahead and ask the public and put it in a ballot? I know it's late, but I mean.
Well, that's an issue for them too.
Further down the road. But I don't necessarily disagree with that idea. But I think in terms of, you know, you're going to see these kinds of complaints show up on Nextdoor or whatever when there's like that 20-foot circumference pine tree in front of the what's the house museum off of?
Dudley House?
Yes. Say they took that down. You think people would be okay with that? Probably not. I personally wouldn't. Yeah. I'm sitting here thinking it doesn't even exist, right? Like
and that's why Simi Valley and their ordinance, which is one I'm more familiar with, has it applied to private property, just exempting the single family zone. Because like the one I remember from a few years ago is, do you remember down on Phil Street, the big Canary Island pines that were growing next to the mobile home park that everyone lost their mind about, they got cut down? That would be okay if we just exempt private across the board. And so what Simi says is, hey, if you're multifamily or commercial or industrial property, and I don't know what their policy intention was here, and I don't want to put words in their mouth, but the thought process being is, oh, those tend to be controlled by more institutional entities, like most apartment complexes, condominium are owned. There's an HOA, there's an investor that owns it, same with shopping centers. It's different than asking someone who, with single family, it's sometimes just an individual that they they differentiated it on that. It, was that right? I don't know, but that's what they did. So that's kind of the hybrid in between these two options.
I think I'd be willing to support the concept of this in principle if the definition of what would be considered a protected tree is broadened. Or sorry, not broadened, the other way around, it's narrowed. Because that is really what, you know, I think that's really what's causing the discussion with McReynolds and the city council in general is that, you know, you get that it's the popular, oh my God, they just removed a 100-foot tall canary on the pine. But then at the same time, how many people actually have one of those on their own property? Not that many. So,
well, and then the other thing, I guess, for better or worse, too, is that the largest landowner, you know, in the city is the school district, and their properties aren't included in any of these. And they've been just butchering, right, tons of eucalyptus trees and other trees to put up solar panels, right? So, and the city has no control over that. So, I mean, you've got that, you know, limitation as well. Well, we've been dancing around this thing.
Serve the chair.
Yes. And so the question is, do we have something at this point that we want to put forward to staff? And is it a hybrid of the original document that was created by the subcommittee? That excludes it to only city trees.
I think it's hard back.
Do we say what?
I would think this needs to come back.
It needs to come back. So we do a B option.
Yeah. I
but that our initial recommendation would be that it's city trees only and not private property, or is everything?
I'm willing to support that if that's I feel like that's kind of where
I know we have one strong opinion the other way, but I'm sensing more of a consensus on the other side. But we can take a vote. We can vote either way. And
my inclination, for what it's worth, is put it forward with the criteria that we have now on how we define a protected tree. Would it limited to publicly owned property?
I can get behind that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second.
Hold on, can you repeat? I could go back a little. I just want to go.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I was saying that inclination. I wasn't making a motion. Okay. I was just saying that's what
you wanted to make a motion.
You need to, yeah. You
need a motion. Yes,
you need a motion. Somebody needs a second.
For one, let's go.
Yeah.
Go. Okay, well, then I will make the motion then to discuss staff to return, direct staff to return to the Parks and Recreation Commission to present the proposed tree ordinance for review and recommendation prior to submission to the City Council with the modification to our initial commission report that it be revised to only apply to trees in the public right of way or on publicly owned property.
And we have a second.
Chair Wood?
Yes.
Vice Chair Turner?
Yes.
Commissioner Christensen?
No.
Commissioner Shelton?
Yes.
Commissioner Tovar?
Yes.
Commissioner Miller?
No.
Okay. Well, it was approved, so we will push that forward and then let city staff consternate over that for a bit and run it to council and then swing it, see what they do with it and swing it back to us. And
yes. Tag your in.
To the magical mystery tour. All right. Good conversation, though. Great. I think very spirited and a lot of well-researched and educated points. All right. We're to the work plan. I know we've spent a lot of time here, so unless there's anything real specific, I would move forward to Department Communications.
Perfect. So some exciting news. There's some repeated pictures up here as far as the continued efforts for hiring. Obviously, right now our big push in recreation is within BYBA, the Youth Basketball Association, the league that we oversee. We're always trying to find gym supervisors and league officials. So keep that in mind. If that's something, you have somebody, a neighbor, a friend, somebody that's, you know, eagerly asking what the city has involved or how they can get involved. Another repeater is encouraging folks that if you ever hear, we try to obviously make our programs as affordable as possible. And we, I believe that we do that as best as we can. Although there is always a fee associated with it. There's ever a family or you hear that might be of a challenge, please encourage folks to take advantage of the youth scholarships opportunity. It's something that is assessed and reassessed and they can be applied for on a seasonal basis. We work off of three seasons. Right now we're currently in the middle of our fall season, fall programming. So an individual could receive a scholarship to help support, if not, you know, fully cover in some circumstances, a program per season. So consider that. Continuing to encourage folks to utilize Ventura Connects. I actually sent it to a patron more recently and reminded them that that also comes with an opportunity to straight geotag in there where that is, take a photo where that is, whatever the request might be. And I know you as commissioners, as well as those that wear city logos wherever we go, typically you are the Q&A. So continue to help folks and direct folks to that. It comes super mobile friendly, computer friendly. It has an app-based opportunity for that too. And it functions pretty simple. If nothing else, just remember Ventura Connects. A genuine, you know, web search for that is it will pop up. One thing that's taken place on October 12th, so I think that's this weekend, is the Victorian holiday event that's taking place over at Olivas Adobe. If you have not done that, please go check it out. It is super neat. Obviously, there is a theme that includes, you know, the season we're in with a little bit of a Halloween thrill, which makes it kind of fun too. So, and it is a free event between 11 a.m. and 3. So won't take up your whole day, and it's absolutely worth a visit if you have not done any of those visits from the those that liaison that or, I'm sorry, what are they called there? Who are the historical site guiders? Docents. Thank you. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
It's been a long meeting. It's okay.
And then last with the Rec Division. So one exciting thing is the 20-year anniversary event that the Aquatic Center is actually going to host. So it's been 20 years since it's been in place.
That's amazing.
Right now is a big challenge to myself and staff to try to gather a list of fun highlights to share at this event, including the number of learn to swim opportunities that that center has provided, a number of first time job opportunities that this has done, the responsibility of being a certified lifeguard. It comes with a high responsibility. And so what has that produced in our staff? So there's a call for past alum to come and visit and congregate to kind of show the reach that has been provided there. And then the staff is working hard to invite not just this. I mean, it's recreation, park and recreation in our department, but it's a city thing. So incorporating some city booths there, some city information, individuals, and looking a way to activate the kiddos and participants into some arts and crafts while they're there. I'm sure we will have some giveaways there. And then we're really looking into figuring out how we can incorporate the pumpkin plunge, which is a floating pumpkin patch. It'll be limited supply, so just know that not everybody will get one if we bring in 400 up to 400 participants. But just know that option could be there. Here pretty soon, we will announce how you can reserve your spot there, because in order to enter the facility, you got to fill out a waiver, and that's the way we'll capture waiver and reservations at the same time. That's a mouthful. Thanks. Anything? No? Good. She's kicking it back over.
All right. Commission communications. Any new items to share? All right. Then with that, I think we've had a sufficient meeting.
Yeah.
We adjourn.
Thank you.
Thanks for sitting in. Thanks for coming. Thank you. Appreciate.
Hold on.
Thank you. Thanks, guys. Lovely conversation. Yeah, it is a great team. Yeah.
Team.
Thank you.